Good morning. My name is James. I'm an alcoholic. I guess it's about the most important thing I have to say about myself these days. But my home group is the Rectory Group in Sitka, Alaska. And if we're talking about service positions, I am the treasurer, secretary, kind of catch-all for, you know how the service positions go, but can you hear me okay? It's kind of echoey up here, but okay. So I'm going to start out with a joke. So this new guy, he goes up to his sponsor and he says, I got to get this crying over quick, you know. I'm not supposed to cry at the joke, so for God's sake. So this newcomer, he goes up to his sponsor and he says, I did it. I finally admitted to the fact I'm an alcoholic. And his learned sponsor, of course, says, great, now everybody knows. That's the way we were. But the topic here today is let it begin with you. And I guess that's about, or let it begin with me, I should say. Though, you try to avoid talking about yourself, we're way too good at that, certainly. But I got sober in Southern California, actually, and I went back to Alaska, our little town of Alaska. It's in the middle of nowhere, it's on an island. We have like 15 miles of road. I went back to Alaska, and the first meeting I went to, I had maybe 60, 90 days of sobriety or something like that, and I went to this meeting, and I had the most amount of sobriety at the meeting. So that was kind of scary. But so fortunately, there was a lot of people, at about the same stage of sobriety as I did, and we started some meetings, and they had some pretty funky meetings going on in our town. One of the meetings, they would take the Seventh Tradition money, and they'd buy cigarettes for the guys in the treatment center, And then there was another Friday night meeting where the guy who was the treasurer, he'd go shopping for CDs every Saturday morning with the Seventh Tradition money, So we had a lot of service to get work out. And we started an inner group. And, there was a lot of stuff going on. There started a bunch of meetings, and we did it wrong, of course. And we had one meeting that was AA Al-Anon and NA meeting, and it was good for a while, but dogs were allowed at the meeting too, and the Al-Anon didn't like the dogs, So. But actually, that meeting is still going on today. Did I ever give my sobriety date? I don't think I did. I got sober December 16th, 1985. And I might add, my wife's sobriety date is November 23rd, 1985. And we drank together and we're still married, so. But, we opened a lot of meetings, there's like three or four meetings a day in Sitka now. And sobriety goes on, and, 10, 15 years down the line, you say, yeah, I've done my service work. I've done my 12-step work. And then one day, we had moved to Olympia, Washington at the time, and a guy says, hey, you want to come down to the prison? We're going to do a meeting, and we're going to have an open house kind of thing, and we can meet the prisoners. And so in Shelton, Washington, I went to the local prison there, and somehow I got involved in corrections work. And every Thursday night for like 7 years, I went to the Washington Corrections Center in Olympia, and or in Shelton, I should say. And prior to that point, like I say, I thought I'd done my I thought I'd done my my 12-step work, but it was getting to the point in my life where it was more important to have a new truck instead of, being involved in service work or whatnot. And, you know, it was just a total fluke that I got involved in this corrections work. And like I said, I'd go every Thursday, I'd go to this prison. And that was like the high point of my week. It was pretty amazing, actually. And, I can't really say that I must have helped some people, but I mean, it really helped me. I can say that for sure, but it was the kind of prison where they were moving people in and out of there all the time. But it was a wonderful thing. And I think that's where I had my true spiritual awakening was doing that, where you were giving something away for free and I was expecting nothing in return. And of course, I received plenty in return as a result of that work. And it's very gratifying. Unfortunately, I moved back to Alaska there about 5 years ago, and there's no corrections work going on in my little town. But I surely do miss it. And if there's anyone here from the Friday night men's step study in Olympia, Washington, hello to you. And the Friday night men's step study, which is on Tuesday night, I don't know, never quite understood that, but, I take this very seriously about this passing the word on. And for many years I thought, it was what I said, and I finally realized it doesn't matter what you say when you pass the word. It's that you're there. It's the warm body is good enough for 12-step work sometime. And just sticking out your hand and being nice to them, and talking about my story. I know I've seen a lot of guys go into prison work and they tell the prisoners how they're supposed to do it. And you know how we are about that stuff, man. We don't like to be told what to do. So I share my experience, strength, and hope there. And that's what works. That's what worked for me. If they would have kept, when I got sober, I think it was because everybody left me alone that I ended up getting sober. And people were not questioning my drinking. They weren't, they were just saying, you have a chance to decide, if you want to get sober or not. And actually, I was in Al-Anon. I got to confess. My wife was in treatment, and I was in Al-Anon. And I spent several weeks in Al-Anon. But I went to Al-Anon for years, actually. And one thing I realized in sobriety is I was married, but I didn't know how to be married. I didn't have a clue how you do that. And that's where I learned how to be a husband. A good husband was in Al-Anon. And you got to take it where you can get it, especially in a little town in Alaska. There.
How we doing? Okay. How much do we got?
Oh wow. 10 minutes left. I'm only halfway through. Yeah. Well, I just ran into a friend of mine here from Canada, and I met her at Burning Man in California. I mean, a few people know what Burning Man is, and and actually, there's a sober camp in Burning Man. It's called Anonymous Camp, and you're just surrounded by all this debauchery, and you know, like the camp next to us, they. You know, these guys brought, you know, you're out on this dry lake in the middle of nowhere, and you know, you have to bring everything with you in there to exist for a week. And at Anonymous Camp, of course, they're having like four meetings a day, and there's a lot of service work going on. But I must admit, I had some bad intentions when I went to Burning Man. And I was going to do some acting out, and unfortunately, you know, I know that, I should say fortunately, but the program is there for me when I'm not there for me. And so I go to this meeting, and the first meeting at Anonymous Camp, and the, of course, it's a pretty loose place, you got to understand. So while the meeting is opening, the leader of the meeting is disrobing, you know. He's taking off his clothes as he's opening the meeting. And by the end of that meeting, I had a sponsee. Later on that day, I did a fist step with a guy, and then I was opening the 7 a.m. meeting every day there at Burning Man, you know, and it was a great time, and it's not what I was interested in really, but you know, the program looked out for me when I was not looking out for myself, and I just had a wonderful time. And another thing is these people would have these tales. They'd come into the Anonymous Camp as like a safe spot at Burning Man because we were sober, and you know, there wasn't too much crazy shit going on there. And these tales these people would tell to get there. You know, they like people who wanted to party the whole way. They'd get somebody sober to drive their RV to Burning Man. You know. And so here are these sober people come into Anonymous Camp, and they're just insane. You know, they're crazy because they've been hanging out with drunks for, you know, the whole trip to Burning Man. And so that was kind of my job. I'd kind of usher them in. Somebody gave me an RV, so I had this RV, and I'd usher them into my little RV and get them a cup of tea and, you know, talk to them about how they were doing. But you know, I just couldn't get away from it, you know. I was just doing service work the whole time I was there, and it turned out completely different than what I thought it was going to happen. Then usually that's a good thing for me when it doesn't happen my way, but it happens, you know, the way it's supposed to. But yeah, and, how are we doing? Okay. Well, let's see, what else can I tell you about service work? I didn't write a speech, as you can tell, you know. 20 minutes, you know, that's easy for us drunks, you know. you know, an hour maybe might be a little difficult, but, you know, I've done that a lot, so. But I try to do that. That's another thing I try to do. I try to speak, like, once a year and share my experience, strength, and hope with each other. And it's a great life, you know. What can I say? It's the best. I mean, I get more than I deserve, actually. And I'm a commercial fisherman by trade, actually. And I meet a lot of people who, you know, there's a lot of drinking and drugging going on in the commercial fishing business, and You know, I remember going on one fishing trip where we consumed 3 6-packs a day per man while we were commercial fishing. But, you know, a lot of guys decide, you know, that, well, I can't do this anymore. And, you know, I got to find a new stock and trade because I can't, you know, I can't be a fisherman. I'll just, there's too much partying going on. And but I stuck with it. And, and I had sober crews. I had a whole sober crew on my boat, you know, 5 6 guys. Everybody was sober. Which is somewhat rare in the Alaska fishing fleet. But nowadays, you know, they're very conscientious of it. And I was successful, too. You know, it's amazing. You know, while we sober up and you have a lot of energy. And I did. And I had a lot of energy. And suddenly I was making a bunch of money, too. That was weird. That was really weird. And I was saving it. And But you know, I'm really grateful to be here. This will be my 6th international, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, what James was saying about the, you get so much out of when you give service in AA. And as I was taking the subway here this morning with a few thousand of my friends, and we were talking about this topic, it's, for me, you were talking about being married, it's at home where a lot of times it's really hard for to let it begin with me, and especially with the spouse. So I appreciate that. our next speaker is a past delegate from Ohio, but lives in Maryland. So please welcome Mary Pack.
Wow. Good morning, everyone. I'm Mary Pack, and I'm an alcoholic. It's a great day to be sober. This is my 4th international convention. My sobriety date, August the 6th, 1991. The home group is the Canton Beginners Group on Saturday morning, 11 o'clock. My service position is a entertainment committee. And the help cleanup committee. And there's a couple of our home group members in here today, and I was really glad to see them this morning. Helps cool me off a little bit because I was like hyperventilating. This is probably the biggest room that I've ever spoken in, and it's a little daunting. My sister came with me. Well, we met each other here. This is our 3rd international convention together. And she comes from Los Angeles, and I live in Baltimore. So this is a convenient way for us to visit with each other. I come from, I'm the oldest of 9 children. And alcoholism runs rampant in our family. My sister is 36 years sober. And she prayed me into these rooms. I say that. She says that she coerced me. Anyway, she's a great example of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm proud to have her as my sister. And we have a brother that's a GSR, actually, and out of Louisville, Kentucky. And when I think about the topic, let it begin with me, I was 26 years old before I started drinking alcoholically because I wasn't going to be like my dad and all his brothers. And turns out, as soon as I got the buzz, you know, from pouring it in me, I became a lot like them and similar traits and all that. And you know, on my third DUI is when I got here and I got serious about sobriety. And I'm not a first nighter. I came here a few days. I don't know, it's like my third time before I finally got this. I didn't take it first. The thing is, I was here for, you know, work and to get the courts off my back and all that. But when I finally got here and understood that I had to do this for me because no one else could do it for me, that's when I got serious about sobriety. And I say this, that where there's breath, there's hope. And if you have life, you have a chance at this thing if you want it bad enough. I have friends that passed away violently from this disease. I took this girl to a meeting on Tuesday, and Thursday morning they found her body with 63 stab wounds and behind a dumpster in Hamilton, Ohio. And my first international convention, I took a young lady with me. I had $300 in my pocket and an old Buick Century, and I left Hamilton, Ohio for Minneapolis. And she and I camped on the way there, and we camped on the way back, and we stayed with a couple that was nice enough to put us up while we were there. And a year and a half later, they found her body in Florida with her throat slit. And, you know, I find it amazing that I got here in one piece from all the places that I put myself. And it's by the grace of God that I stand here before you today. It's not anything that I deserve, like James was saying. I don't deserve. If I got what I deserved, I would probably be dead or in jail. So I think that, you know, what we when we come here and we find the program is the it. For me, if we are working the steps and we show people by our example, by suiting up and showing up, you know, then maybe they can see that they can do it too. I don't know if I can talk 20 minutes or not. But I'm going to try. And it's about the people that went before me and showed me that this thing could be done. You know, I have my friends here from Baltimore, and there is so much good sobriety there that I'm going to hate it when I retire and go back home. We've been in Baltimore for 10 years, and we like Baltimore, but we don't have any family there. So, you know, yay! Did you hear all that? It's great. I love the convention because you can just exude. Woohoo! It's awesome. Wave. Wasn't that a great party last night? Felt a little like sardines going back in the train, but we arrived back at the hotel in one piece. After getting off the train, we had a long walk. Anyway, the thing is, you know, we come here and most of us here, we have this thing, you know. And what our job is to pass it along. When I lived in Ohio, I was all about general service, and I got to be the delegate, and it wasn't really through any great work on my part. I just suited up and showed up, and one day I found myself the treasurer, and you know, it wasn't too many months later I found myself the delegate, and that's the way it was at that moment in Southwest Ohio. Today I understand it's a lot different, but you know, I know all of the delegates that came after me. What we try to do is instill the enthusiasm for general service, and it's very important. We'll put that out there for anybody who is thinking about it. I got into general service with a broken heart, and it surely helped my broken heart. So if anybody out there has a broken heart, get into general service and you will stay busy and it will go away. And there will come along somebody that, you know, that you want in your life and that you end up marrying your best friend. That's what I did. And he should be in the room, but I think that the elevators must have a lot of traffic jams this morning because he has to ride one of those little carts. So he's here at the convention with his sponsor. And what I wanted to say is, in Ohio, I was all about general service, and what I did there to start myself out was, my sponsor at the time, when I first got sober, she sent me to, we did detox meetings, and we went to the jail. Did the meeting for the women in the Butler County Jail on Tuesdays for like 8 years. And Thursday nights at the Juvenile Detention Center. In between, there was a Sojourner Treatment Center, residential treatment center for women across the river from where I lived, and in between, I would take the women from there to meetings. And I didn't really have any sponsees to speak of when I was in Ohio. But I think that God gives you sponsees in his own time. And now I'm a proud sponsor of 5 girls. And, you know, that's when we were discussing this before the meeting, that we find out that some of us are sicker than others. And I'm one of the sick ones myself, so, but it's an awesome thing to pass this thing on, and for the people that, you know, they're not going to get it if they don't want it, and this is where we find faith and hope and love enough to pass it on. My first sponsor had quit going to meetings, and she was ill. So I got another sponsor in Ohio, and when I got up here, she was very ill with COPD, and she ended up passing away after I was up here in Baltimore for a couple years. And I really miss Patty. She was married to Bill Wilson, but not the Bill Wilson. And, you know, as much as I miss my people from Ohio when I first came here, I have some really good friends here that live in, they're in Atlanta now, but, you know, usually we're in Baltimore. And I love the AA there. When I first got there, I'm going, this is so different. But, you know, we're alcoholics everywhere. And we have the same common problem. And with Alcoholics Anonymous, we have the same common solution. Smile. Okay. 8 minutes. Oh, you are out there, Andy. Hi. Anyway, that's a peep that's in Virginia now that used to be in Ohio. I was getting sober when I met him. He's my husband's sponsor, Andy and Dawn. Hi, Dawn. Is it amazing the people that you meet in Alcoholics Anonymous? And because, you know, I keep coming back to General Service, but it was a lot about what I was about when I first got sober. I went to the conference, and you meet people from all over, United States and Canada, and here in Atlanta at the Delegates Reunion. I met some people from, you know, from Australia, New Zealand, India, but I mean, just from all over. And what an amazing adventure. And just would never have expected this when I first got sober. You know, would never have expected it. The program teaches me a lot of things, and I would like to pass on something that I've been noticing at meetings. You go to a meeting, and people get up in the middle, and they go get their coffee, and they go out and smoke their cigarettes and whatever. And I was taught that you get all that taken care of before the meeting, and you sit there until the meeting's over. But, you know, I could be guilty of that. I could be guilty of that myself, you know. Sometimes when you gotta go, you gotta go. So anyway, I'm taking a minute. That's one. Trying to think what I can say. Okay, so when I first got sober, my first sobriety date was May 26, 1990. And 14 months and a week later, I'm drinking a beer and a half. I poured the other half out and said, this isn't what I'm about anymore. My first... The guy that I was seeing at the time was drinking, and I thought, well, you know, you can't lick them, you join them. And so he was living in Indianapolis, and I said, okay, I have to go. And I went back and haven't felt it necessary to pick up a drink since August of 5th of 1991. And not that I haven't stared down a drink, but I haven't picked one up. And, you know, there's a fine line there, isn't there? I mean, we are only one drink away from a drunk. And my, I just find it amazing for me that I haven't picked up one yet. And I know that this could happen to me. So it's, what we have is fragile, and we need to stay on top of it and be aware, you know, that any little thing could set it off, like a mouthwash. We have to, you know, we have to watch these things that normal people don't have to watch out for. So I try to tell the girls, you know, watch what you're putting in your mouth. I mean, Ambisol, you know, they don't have the all on there for nothing. And it just, it could set up the craving, and it teaches us that in the very beginning of the book. And that's where we get our basic information, and what we pass on is right there in those first 164 pages. I'm not discounting the stories. We all have one. And so And we have these principles that we can live by and that we study to help us get through the next day. You know, I feel like I'm rambling on up here, so I'm just going to close it out and let the party begin. Thanks, everybody, for listening to me. Thank you, Father.
It really is amazing to stand up here and see all of you guys. We're up here only because we checked a box on our registration. So it's funny how God works. But I think you should all give yourself a round of applause. This is so cool. We have so many people here. And we're up early and dressed and clean. It's awesome. And I bet you remember what you did last night too, right? Our last speaker is also a past delegate from Panel 56, and he has traveled all the way from Canada. So please welcome John.
Good morning. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May the 13th, 1991. And thank you. Actually, thank you. And, you know, I like the sound of that. And not the May 13, 1991 so much, but I like the sound of my sobriety date is, you know, because I have one. And I want to hold on to that for as long as I'm alive. I did prepare a few notes. I usually don't use notes. I like to just, you know, to speak, but like a lot of alcoholics, I sort of start rambling and I sort of forget where I'm going. I have no idea where I got to, how to get back. And so I wonder, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what is like now is hasn't changed a lot. So bear with me on this. I'm sort of awkward with these things. You know, my first international was in Minneapolis. And I went down there. Yes, it's a great one. First one's always the best, I think. I went down there with a bunch of friends, and for all of us, it was our first one, and we came away from that convention in Minneapolis just blown away. We had never seen so many happy, sober people in our lives. The energy and the enthusiasm and the spirit was just overwhelming to the point. You know, we came back so inspired, and our spiritual cups were so full that all we could think about was Toronto in 2005. And, you know, although we live one day at a time, I had that on my calendar the day after Minneapolis finished. You know, we got to Toronto in 2005, and I had that exact same experience all over again, even more so. And we left Toronto, and you know, San Antonio went on the calendar right away. And we got down there, and we left there and, you know, and pegged Atlanta. You know, and so here we are. And, you know, I just think that's just absolutely amazing. So, you know, when I leave here on Sunday, and I expect all of us to leave on Sunday, we'll leave with that same feeling of that we get from being together as a fellowship. And you know, our spiritual cups filled up and feeling that inspiration that we all have and take that back to our own groups and our own areas and share that with those people that couldn't come here for whatever reason it was. And then I expect all of you to put Detroit on your calendars on Sunday at 11:01 as we wrap it up. I looked at our theme this year of 80 years of happy, joyous, and free. You know, 80 years is a pretty amazing number for us. But I look at that happy, joyous, and free, you know, and I can really honestly tell you today that I experienced that feeling of being happy, joyous, and free almost every day when I wake up. And it's been that way for probably 23 of my 24 years of sobriety. It's good. It is really good. You know, sobering up is tough. In my first year, like many, it was really, really tough. But, you know, we come in, we go through the steps, we start getting active in our groups, and we become a part of our groups. And I was told really quickly, get in the center of the boat. It's hard to fall out if you're in the center. And I tried to do that. But, you know, I've had just the most amazing life. And, you know, still today, You know, often I'll get up in a day and I'll be doing something and I'll just pinch myself. I really do. I really do that this is really happening and this is really real and I really feel this way. You know, and there's a lot of gratitude that comes with that because, you know I don't do that alone. You know, I do it with all of you. And, you know, and I really also really feel fortunate that I really still carry a really strong sense of awe and amazement at our program and the fellows and the people I meet in this program. And, you know, and I truly hope I never lose that feeling of awe and amazement. And, you know, I hope I never lose respect for the answer, ever lose respect for the answer. And, you know, I think that by continuing to come and continuing to be a part of and doing my little bit to contribute towards that will ensure that I maintain that respect for the answer. You know, in A Vision for You, towards the end, it talks about something I grasped onto early in sobriety, in the first few years. One of the final lines in there, it talks about, you know, after our imagination will be fired, and it says, the most satisfying years of your existence lie ahead. And the first time I really read that, and it really impacted me, I was about 2 or 3 years sober, and my life was good at that point. And I thought, my life is really good, and if I can just sort of maintain this from here on out, this is a good deal, and I'm good. And I read that, and I thought, the most satisfying years of your existence still lies ahead. And I thought, how is that possible? How is it possible that it's still ahead of me, you know, the same way? You know, and then, you know, years go on, and, you know, I don't know, 10 years or something, and life is still good, and life is going on well. And, you know, I read those words again, and the most satisfying years of my existence lie in front of me, and I thought, unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. You know, I stand here today with all of you, and I report, you know, things are pretty darn good. I have my days, we all do, but, you know, on balance, life is good. But I still know that the most satisfying years of my existence are in front of me. And is that not a good deal or what? I think it is. But I can assure you, that's not the way it was when I walked in here, for sure. Now, I think I was like everybody that walks in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a very broken person. You know, I was unemployed. I was unemployable. My marriage was about done. There was really no hope for anything. And I'd really sort of resigned myself to the fact that this is my lot in life. It happens, and this is mine. And one day in desperation, I just reached out and I picked up the phone and I called our central office, and you know, I really thank God and I'm grateful that somebody was there to answer that phone call that day that I happened to choose to phone. And someone was there, and more importantly, somebody else called me from a group and came out and spoke to me and took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was May of 1988. Now you notice if you're listening, my sobriety date is May of 1991. Explain how I got there. Well, they took me to that meeting, and you know, that club room was alive, it was functioning, there were meetings going on, there was coffee brewing, people taking meetings, sobriety was taking place, and all ready for me that day that I finally came in and showed up here. And people were there to do what we asked them to do and carry the message, and they did that to me. You know, and the people in my group, by the way, is the First Step group, and we really focus on that newcomer. We make sure we know if there's a newcomer in the room, and we make them feel welcome, and we make sure they come back. And those people did that for me. But, you know, in all that desperation that I had of coming in, you know, I didn't stay sober. And I went out, and it was another 3 years before I got back here. You know, and in those 3 years out in my travels here and there, I would run into some folks that I had met. And they encouraged me. They said, you know, John, we'd really like to see you come back, and please know that there's a chair waiting for you should you ever make it back, and we hope you do. And that was all they said, and off they went. And one day I ran into a couple of guys that came in at the exact same time I did. And, you know, I thought I looked bad. Compared to these guys, I looked good. They were pretty rough. And I saw these two guys, and I didn't recognize them. They'd stayed sober. And they had that fire in their eyes that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was shocked. I was really kind of shaken how good these guys were, and they did the same thing. They encouraged me to come back. They told me there was a chair waiting, and they hoped to see me come back in there. And, you know, on May 13th of 1991, I came back. And talking to my fellow panelists here, all of our spouses are in the program, and that's really nice. And, you know, my wife and I sobered up on May 13th, 1991, together. We had our last drink together. I took her to a treatment center, and I walked back to my group. So I want to say to those people that it is possible for a husband and wife or your partner to sober up together, and you can do it. We were given the odds of about 1 billion to 1 that it would take place. So my wife is a stubborn girl. She said, those are odds I like. Gives me a challenge. And we stand here today. You know, so when I walked back into that club room, those 12 steps were there, those people were there, everything was in place. And, you know, I finally received the message that we all received. And, you know, my recovery was possible because of all the thousands and hundreds of thousands of women and men that came before me and allowed it to be available when I showed up. It was a lot of hard work by a lot of people to sort of safeguard and protect our message and to ensure that, you know, the steps and traditions and fellowship that Bill and Bob and all those came before that worked for them was available for me. You know, but I also realize that those things don't happen in a vacuum, and those things don't happen by accident. It's because a lot of people care, and a lot of people take time to do those things that it takes to make those meetings work and to make sure our program stays intact and make sure I have the same shot as everybody else. And so, you know, I realize that sobriety comes with responsibility. And it really does. You know, and it comes with the responsibility, and our responsibility pledge, of course, to reach out our hand to ensure that the message is there for everybody. And, you know, but I think it's broader than that. I really do. You know, the 2015 General Service Conference this past April, their theme was 80 years of recovery, unity, and service, our foundation for the future. You know, and I read that, and I really thought, you know, we've got 80 years of Alcoholics Anonymous behind us. We have an amazing foundation, and we work on that foundation. Will carry us forward into the future. And I think a lot of that's where our responsibility lies today. And I hope that I work towards that. You know, I think that... how are we doing? Good. Good. You know, I think so, you know, a lot of my job, a lot of my responsibility, and I hope all of yours, you know, is to work to strengthen that foundation even more and to ensure that our doors are open for those people that are not here yet. And so that the message that saved my life and I think saved your life is still there for the next person and those people yet to come. And they have the same chance at sobriety that all of us have had. So, you know, with that, you know, I sort of came to realize that, you know, it's my turn. You know, and it's your turn. It's our turn to pick up that torch and carry that torch and ensure that that light is there and visible to somebody that is coming up behind us and is not yet here yet. And, you know, and it begins with me. But I think more importantly, it begins with us. You know, we do these things together. And to ensure that next person can help, gets the help. You know, at the end of Dr. Bob's story, he lists off, you know, four reasons why he does what he does. And, you know, the first one he talks about is, you know, he feels a sense of duty. And he says, you know, it's a pleasure. And number three, he says, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And number four, because every time I do so, I take out a little more insurance against a possible slip. You know, I read those, and I've read those many, many times, and I was thinking about that, you know, leading up to here, and, you know, I think about his words of a sense of duty, and I think I carry a sense of duty to try and do what I can to ensure that that message is here, intact, and good, and there for the next person. And, you know, I think I have a duty to also pay back a little bit to our fellowship and to my fellow members and to the men and women who came, you know, before us that did their part and carried that torch, you know, until we were here and we were ready and, you know, it's our turn. I really believe it's, you know, we're sober in Alcoholics Anonymous today and we're sitting in a chair. It's our turn and we need to do that and maintain that and go forward. And it's, you know, it's not up to somebody else. You know, it's not up to someone else to do it. You know, it's up to us. It's up to me. And it begins with me. Yeah, but I also need to take caution that I don't feel that I've got a better message. I don't feel I need to change or tweak our program at all. You know, I have to make sure I guard against those kinds of things and, you know, and just do the things I hope that will continue to strengthen that foundation that we have. And so it continues. You know, it just continues on. So, you know, I know each day, you know, I think it begins with me all over again. I think it begins with you when we get up and, you know, how do we contribute? You know, how do we contribute towards our fellowship and your club room and my club room and my service area and you know, what can I do? You know, I've been sober 24 years and, you know, I know I go into some circles and that's a big number. And I go into a place like the convention and you know, there's a lot of long-time sobriety here and, you know, some guys will turn around and say, well, I think you're finally starting to be serious about this. So, can I put you in your place real quick? Real quick. But, you know, I've had the really pleasure and privilege also of serving, you know, at my group and at intergroup, and I spent about 12 years in our general service structure, and as was mentioned, I had the privilege of serving as a delegate to the General Service Conference in 2006 and 2007, and Mary knows it's an amazing experience. I just wish everybody would have that. But it's not everybody's cup of tea, I have to tell you. But over these years, you know, I've observed a lot of things, a lot of really good things. You know, I've observed a few things I don't like. You know, I've, in those observations, I've really sort of seen where, looking forward one day at a time, one convention at a time, about the kind of AA member I really want to be. You know, about the kind of person I really want to be. And I think equally important for me sometimes is I've observed sometimes the kind of AA member I don't want to be. Or the kind of person I don't want to be. You know, and so I take those things to heart and, you know, I really have a hope someday. I really have a hope someday that I, and I think I hope all of you, can be seen in your respective groups as sort of an elder statesman or an elder stateswoman rather than a bleeding deacon. I really don't want to, I want to go there. And you know, sometimes it's easy to criticize our fellow members, you know, if they're trying to do the work of Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, maybe they're not doing it the way you think they should be doing it, or I've seen some older members and longer-term members that sort of don't like certain things that are happening, and they're quick to criticize and slow to help. And it's easy to criticize things. Sometimes it's tougher to help. You know, and so I think that, you know, part of this responsibility we have is to, if you don't like something or you see something you think should maybe be changed slightly, is, you know, come in with a solution. Come in with some help. Come in with some encouragement. You know, if you've got experience and there's a newer member that seems to be struggling in the service structure or within your group and doing things that, you know, maybe it's your job to try and be of help to them rather than sitting in your corner and just grumbling about these sort of things. Or at least that's what I believe. And remember, when we stand up here, this is just my thoughts and feelings and opinions and for what they're worth. But I think it's really, really important that we encourage our newer members to get into the service side of Alcoholics Anonymous, in whatever capacity that is. It doesn't have to be in an intergroup or a general service. You know, it means opening up your meeting. It means welcoming people at the door. It means making coffee. It means making them feel a part of the group. It helped them to understand how our society and our fellowship functions, and it doesn't happen by accident. And at some point, they're going to have to stand up and be the leadership of Alcoholics Anonymous and carry that, be that beacon, carry that torch for those new people coming forward. So I really, really hope I can, and I hope that all of us can, is be that encouraging member, be that one that can put a little arm around somebody's shoulder and say, I can offer some help if you'd like it. Not just to getting sober, but in understanding our fellowship and our traditions and our concepts, and be there. And I think that we are, you know, who are sober today really owe that to Bill and Bob and those hundreds of thousands of men and women that have come before us, you know, to ensure that this is here and we have that same message of hope and recovery and unity and service, and we build on that foundation. And that one day when that person out of the blue decides that for whatever reason today's the day I need to call for help, you know, the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous is there, and they could walk into a meeting room of Alcoholics Anonymous and recognize it as a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous real fast. They don't have to think hard. You know, do I have a minute still?
Good.
Thank you. This is where I start going to tangents and forget where I'm going and how I got there and where I am. So, a number of years ago, at Christmas time, my wife got a call from her mother. Her folks, we were in sort of Western Canada, Central Western Canada. They live on the West Coast. But she got a call from her mother saying, your brother tried to kill himself. This was at Christmas time. And he was taken to a hospital. And they told him that he has a drinking problem. And he's an alcoholic. And he needs help. And, of course, her mother knew that Robin and I are in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, what should I do? So without thinking, without a skip, she says, get him to an AA meeting near you. They'll know what to do. They'll look after him. And she could say that in a split second without thinking, because she was confident that the AA club room, whichever one that was, that he was going to go to, that he would get the same message that she got, that we got, that we all got. And she knew that they would look after him. You know, that's about 2,000 kilometers away, and for you guys, 1,600 miles. But, you know, he did get sober. That group looked after him. And he died a few years ago of cancer, too early in life. But he went sober, with 15 years sober. So I hope that continues, and I think that that's our responsibility. And, you know, it's not going to start with anybody else but us every day. Every day. I was thinking, yes, one day at a time, one convention at a time, but not too distant future, we're going to be standing somewhere celebrating the 100th anniversary. That's a pretty big deal. That's a pretty exciting thing. And I know it's a little way, but, you know, I want that to happen. You know, I want Alcoholics Anonymous to be there, and I want us to be celebrating, and I want us to be happy and joyous and free for that. You know, in the sobriety countdown, I was thinking, you know, here that's 20 years away, and the sobriety countdown that will happen at that one, you know, is going to be a bunch of people that are going to stand up with 20 years of sobriety, which means they sobered up now. You know, it would be really sort of neat to think that in your own tiny, tiny little way, in my own tiny, tiny little way, you know, we all contributed towards that and made that possible for them. And, you know, it's a pretty neat deal. It's a pretty neat deal. So, you know, I want to look back at that and again, feel good about what we did. So, you know, let's remember it's our turn. It begins with us. You know, let's be that beacon of hope. So I want to thank you for my sobriety. I see all of you in Detroit, for sure. I hope to see all of you at the 100th. Have a great convention, and thank you for being here today.